You are listening to the Amen Corner, a JCast Network podcast. For more information about other JCast Network podcasts and blogs, please visit jcastnetwork.org. For more information about the Amen Corner, please follow them on Twitter, Facebook, and all your other favorite social media.
Welcome to Season 8, Episode 27 of the Amen Corner. He's Stephen Cook.
And he's Brad Rothschild.
Hey, man, we are getting close to the end of the season.
I know.
It's like, although from a weather perspective, it doesn't feel like the middle to end of May.
Dude, it's been like chilly.
It's cold and rainy.
It's like we have had one sunny day here in DC in like 2 weeks.
It's kind
it was
of
like
depressing.
95 for a week, and then it's just rained.
It's depressing. Every once in a while, it's a nice day, and then it's just like crappy.
So bad. You know, I was up in Westchester on Wednesday night.
Can you pronounce that properly? You got to use your Long Island accent.
Westchester.
There we go. Thank you. Thank you. Go on. Proceed.
I was up in Westchester.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, I drove up from DC. It's just easier to drive than take the train. I drove up from DC in the rain, and I drove home in the rain. And it wasn't just like, oh, it's raining. It was like pouring on
me.
Was awful.
Yeah,
one nice day on Thursday when you were here.
Right.
It was a nice day.
Right. You were here and I was there. And it was nice there too.
Where?
We're in DC, in the DC
area. Yeah. You're in DC and I was in DC, but I didn't see you on Thursday.
No. I had a long day on Thursday.
Oh. Talk about long days. How did the screening go at the DC Film Festival?
The screening was good. So I ended up driving down Wednesday at like 8 o'clock at night, which, you know, there's not a lot of traffic at that hour.
That's the best time to go.
And then got up early and filmed the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to the JCC in Washington, D.C., and we had the screening of the film. A bunch of my friends other than you were there. I know you were not in...
I wasn't in town.
Well, you were, but you had your own thing going
on. No. Oh, Thursday night. Right. I'm thinking Wednesday. Wednesday was when I was in Westchester.
Yeah, you had your own thing going on. But they started the screening at 8:10, which is a really weird time to start a screening because the film doesn't end until like 9:40.
Yeah.
And then there's a Q&A after that goes until like 10:30 because people have questions.
Right.
And one of my friends, who I won't name because I don't want to embarrass him, like he goes to bed early generally, and he was out there like through the Q&A.
Was he nodding off?
He wasn't nodding off, but it meant a lot to me that he was still awake at that hour.
So I felt bad, so bad. And Lauren wanted to do something for you here. Yeah. And just turns out that the party that was being thrown, the book party that was being thrown in my honor by the ambassador from the UAE was the same evening.
Yeah. So what I haven't told you is that I decided at the end of the evening that I was going to drive back to New York.
Did you drive back at the end?
I got home at like 3 a.m.
Oh, my God. So I got to tell you what happened to me. How was that drive? You had your cameraman with you and everything.
Camera person. She's a woman.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but we decided like, because on the way to the JCC, I'm like, I know this is going to sound crazy, but what do you think about going back tonight? And she's like, I've been thinking of that all day. I'm like, all right.
There's no traffic.
There was no traffic.
Yeah.
And you know, if you're not driving 120 miles an hour, you could creep up close to 90 for most of the way at that hour.
Those cannonball runs that I've done from DC to Massachusetts to the ferry from Martha's Vineyard, we always leave at like 8:30 at night. I set the car at like 82 miles an hour.
Dude,
I never hit the brakes.
I left it like close to 11. Probably after 11. It was definitely after 11. And it was significantly less than 4 hours to New York. Plus, I stopped for gas at one point.
Camera person live?
She lives in the city too. So she lives in Midtown right outside.
Oh,
right,
great.
Right by the tunnel.
So you could just drop her off.
The next day, Michelle's like, were you going 90 the whole way? I'm like, I don't know.
But it reminds me of the time Lauren and I drove from, this is way before kids, drove from my parents' house to my in-laws' house. So we drove from Long Island to the suburbs of Boston on Christmas Day. And we got there so fast that we waited 45 minutes before calling my parents.
Wow, because it was too early.
Because my father would have done the calculations and been like, holy shit, you were going 92 miles.
Yeah, I mean, we were going fast.
That's actually, I don't know, that sounds like a rational thing to do, because just getting up and then in the morning and driving, you would have gotten stuck in tons of traffic.
And, it, you know, I thought like, oh, yes, we'll get stuck in tons of traffic. And the whole day is killed. Right. Because you're not pulling into New York until whatever. But you know what I discovered? My whole day was killed anyway the next day, because Mia had an appointment at the German consulate to get her passport renewed at like 8:20 on Friday. And since I found a parking spot on the street, I was like, you know what? I'll drive, because she has to get back to school afterwards.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
So I got maybe 4 hours of sleep between Thursday and Friday, and I was a fucking zombie the rest of the day.
Well, listen to what happened to me. So we had this great party, great book party. It was the unbook party. It was music, food.
No reading of
80s,
the book.
80s music and great wine and drinks and so on and so forth. So one, it was at a very nice place, and so one of the waiters – like sort of was either assigned or assigned himself to make sure that my wine glass was always filled.
I hope you weren't driving.
And I made the mistake of telling him I have to be up. I said, don't do that. I have to be up at 4 a.m. to make a 6 o'clock train, because I was going back to New York. I was in Westchester on Wednesday, DC Thursday, and I gave a talk at the JCC of the Upper West Side yesterday for my 90-year-old aunt's foreign policy group.
You mean Friday?
Friday, right. Yeah. And so I got up at 4, showered.
Yeah.
He kept pouring wine in my glass. I got up at 4, showered, drove to the office, parked my car, and got on the train ride to New York yesterday morning was so rough. On Friday morning was so rough.
Yeah, but you could have slept.
Oh. Then to give a talk, and then to go back. I was hungover, so I walked from Penn Station to the JCC, which is on like 75th in Amsterdam or 75th in Columbus.
No, I have to.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I should have gone with you.
It was a game time decision. And I was not going to say get in the car at 11:30 at night. And anyway. where would you have stayed? No, you just stayed here.
Stay in your house.
That's the answer. You just stayed here. Like, duh, we got two extra rooms.
Yeah, that would have been fine.
Yeah.
So, what else is going on?
I don't know, man. We are hopefully, now that the college school year is winding down, that a lot of these protests will sort of go away and at least slow down.
Congressman Richie Torres posted a photo yesterday of a building at the New School, which is completely occupied by pro-Palestinian
protesters. The New School seems very problematic.
And which has large banners of photos of Jews that should be targeted. I couldn't make it out from the photo who those Jews are, but it's like they have like targets.
My understanding was that the New School was founded by a bunch of German Jewish refugees.
It was indeed, because written by a guy who was a founder of the New School, and he's a German Jew.
Right, escaping Nazi persecution, they founded university.
They were definitely scholars of the left. I mean, one of the big things that he wrote, in addition to writing this kind of revisionist thing about the national interest, he wrote a revisionist history of the Constitution. That it was, it was a kind of economic determinist, that the founders were seeking to protect certain economic interests, which is not an unheard of thing in people who were devising institutions. But Yes, they're all scholars of the left.
But they were all Jews.
They were all Jews.
Yeah, so now it's sort of a nice legacy that...
Well, look, I mean, think about all of the Jewish philanthropy and that has gone to places like Columbia and Harvard and all these other places, Yale. And then think of all the, I mean, I'm not being a Jewish supremacist here, like all the famous Jewish scholars who researched and made their discoveries and taught at these places. It's quite extraordinary.
Are you saying that there are a lot of Jewish academics?
There are.
Are you Dr. Stephen Cook saying that there are a lot of Jewish academics? Yeah. Is that what we're saying?
They're not all, you know, they are a fractious lot with very, very different views.
Really?
We were just talking about that because I got an email asking to sign a letter opposing the boycott of Israeli academics, which I will happily do. But there are others who will happily participate, who are Jewish, happily participate in that boycott of Israeli academics.
Two Jews, three opinions.
Mm.
Nothing new. It's not surprising to have Jews on both sides of this argument, if not three sides of a two-sided argument. Yeah. Well, on the one hand,
he's a putz. He's a schmuck.
But it's not good.
No. Especially, I mean, it's just, I was telling you that the Washington Post ran a front page story, Saturday's paper, was online on Friday morning. That was just rank anti-Semitism. Just, I mean, there was no getting around the fact. I mean, the story was wealthy Jewish businessmen in New York pressuring Mayor Adams to get the NYPD to crack down on Columbia. And the mayor's office itself said, this is absurd.
Was that in the article was that after the fact? Was the mayor's office quoted?
Mayor's office, the guy, I guess he's a deputy mayor for something or other. He said the framing of the article is completely off and reinforces anti-Semitic tropes. Here's what happened. And there's no way that we would have asked the NYPD a crackdown on something. The NYPD entered Columbia University, which has like this history with the NYPD, at the express invitation of the president of Columbia University, not Daniel Lubetzky and all these other big business people.
Well, did the author of the article reach out to the mayor's office for comment before it was published? Like, how come that was not
I think part of the story? The implication being that they sort of dispensed with what the mayor's office said because narrative is more important than fact.
So there's an article that misrepresented what happened in order to blame wealthy Jews.
Right, exactly.
Is that what we're talking about?
Somewhat of a debate in the Cook household of whether to continue to subscribe.
Yeah. And
we know plenty of people who have ended their, and generally speaking, I've been like, stop the nonsense. Like, there was a number of years ago where people were, I think it was during the 2014 conflict, people were like, I'm canceling my New York Times subscription.
People say that all the time.
And I'm the pro cancel the post one in the house right
really?
Now. Really? Lauren's like, look, if you can't, we want to have the paper because we want to know what's going on kind of around us. We like the food section. She's like, and we can get it electronically, but we're still paying
the same.
I was
amount?
Like, okay, it's a lot less expensive.
Yeah. So it's not the and same.
And then
amount.
She's like, but then you always talk about the guy who delivers the paper, this must be one of his four jobs. And you give him a big tip around holiday time. You're like, there's a knock-on effect of not getting the post on the driveway and so on and so forth. So I'm like frozen. I don't really know what to do. Like, I feel like I have to make some sort of statement about it. And writing a letter to the editor they just ignore it.
They don't give a shit.
They don't give a shit. And so I don't know.
I'm trying to get
another paper. Maybe I'll get the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, great.
Wall Street. Let me tell you something. Wall Street Journal. it has the best journalists in the Middle East.
Okay, and also the most problematic.
The editorial page, forget it. But yeah. If you want straight up news about the world and you're interested in the Middle East, the best crew are employed by the Wall Street Journal. Best group in Saudi Arabia, best group in Israel, best anywhere in the region.
I'm trying to get my head around the notion of that you'll be punishing your newspaper delivery guy.
Well,
by not getting the paper anymore. And that's why you're not
going to cancel. He's going to lose out on a Christmas tip. I don't know. And he gets paid by the number of papers he delivers.
Does he, or does he get paid by just the hours? I know.
When I was the paper boy, I got paid by the number of houses that I got tipped.
Can you still tip him even if you don't get the paper?
Well, I think he's also the guy who delivers the Wall Street Journal.
So maybe you're just going to switch to the Wall Street Journal. You think that's what's going to happen? What are you going to do about the food section?
Well, I don't know. Steal it from our other neighbors.
Or you can just find other...
No. There's Washingtonian Magazine, there's Mocha 360, there's lots of news outlets that we could feel like
where you live, it's vital to have access to a food section because so many of the food options down by you are shitty.
Well, I will say this.
Yeah.
I think that everybody's like, oh, the dining scene in DC has gotten so much better over the years, and everybody's been saying that for years. I think the very high end dining scene is pretty good. I think at that kind of range where, yeah, you want Lauren and I go out and splurge a little, I think it's kind of meh. Yeah. But if you want really good ethnic food, the suburbs of Washington, D.C. are hard to beat. The best Chinese food. Last night, Lauren and I went and we went to a place that specializes in food from the southern India, like Chennai, what used to be called Madras, where I spent some time a decade ago. Incredible. We left, we're like, we got to go back there. We had amazing Thai food. So if you want like Asian food, Montgomery County, Maryland, hard to beat. If you want Middle Eastern food, really hard to beat the Virginia suburbs, or Vietnamese food in the Virginia suburbs.
Look, any place where there are a large number of immigrants from any particular region, you'll find good ethnic food.
Yeah. But we had a phenomenal Persian meal in McLean, Virginia a couple months ago.
I had some shitty ass coffee in Northern Virginia on Thursday and we had to fucking throw it out. It was that bad.
Where'd you go? Like Burger King? You have a BK Jill or something?
Please, at least there I know I would have decent coffee. We looked for a coffee place nearby where we were going to be filming, and we found something that was in some goddamn office park. And we walked in, and the camera woman was like, "Do you have any food?" And they're like, "No, we don't have food today."
I mean, that's an immediate turnaround.
And then we're like, all right, we'll just have coffee. And then they're like, oh, right around the thing, there's a restaurant, you can get food. Like, all right. The coffee, we took a couple sips and we're like, this is not good. Like, this is really bad. And we threw it out and we ended up going to like a Blue Bottle, I think, which they have in New York City. So I'm like, all right, it's going to be expensive.
One in Moynihan Train Hall.
Like, it's going to be expensive, but it'll be fine. Right. And fortunately, we had coffee. But I was like, this is really bad. Like, how do people live here?
So wait. Well, we get by. and with my periodic trips to New York, I'm
all right, that's you.
So what's your view? So, like, cancel the Post? Don't cancel the Post? Have you read the article? We should read the article. It's pretty
bad. I should look at the article. But I used to subscribe to the Post online only. Yes. And I stopped a couple of years ago because I can't remember what it was that really upset me. It probably had to do with like some bending over backwards to explain Trump in some way. Mm. And I was like, I don't need to pay for this because unlike you, I don't care about the food section in Washington, D.C. And I felt like when I was getting it, I'm like, oh, it's really important to support journalism that's real.
Right.
And then I was like, all right, I don't need to be supporting this. And I have struggled with my support for the New York Times as well, but I continue to get it.
I mean, New York Times, it's sort of like, it's like internet access. You kind of have to have it, right?
Unfortunately, yes.
I'll tell you, the truth be told about the Post is that I never thought its international coverage was very good.
Yeah.
I thought that the regular columnists were basically, you know, it was like a monochrome, other than George Will, who remains interesting.
But you like the local coverage.
The best part of it was the Metro section.
Yeah.
Great coverage of local.
Yeah.
Then the Post lost like $150 million last year, and Jeff Bezos is like, hey, fix this. And what did they do? They gutted the best part of the paper. They completely gutted the Metro section. The Metro section last August exposed great investigative reporting, exposing a principal in Montgomery County, Maryland, who had been constantly promoted, but he had been credibly accused of sexual harassment over 12 years.
Boy, of children or of teachers? Or of both?
Teachers. Of yeah. teachers.
Not that that, makes it,
sexual,
not that that makes it better.
Right.
Let's be clear.
Sexual, you know, just all this predatory behavior and then yeah. punishing teachers who, you know, didn't. I mean, and crude.
Where was this school?
It was in Montgomery County. In
which county town? Where I live.
And then.
Which town is it?
What?
Which town?
Oh, I don't remember which yeah. town it was. I mean, you know, because it's a countywide school system. The guy moved around.
Yeah, I see.
In any event, they kept promoting. Anyway, the Post Metro section reporters blew the lid on this story, ended up costing the superintendent her job and other people and their jobs and so on and so forth. Great reporting. A few months later, it was when the Post revealed that it lost $150 million and they got to fix it. And they gutted the Metro section. Now the Metro section is like, a cat story and obituaries.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this isn't worth it.
Yeah. It sucks.
So.
It sucks.
But and you know, it's my friend and former boss, Rob Satloff, who is the executive director of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, where Lauren and I met. He has a regular blog at the Times of Israel, mm-hmm. and he has spent the better part of the last 8 months tearing apart the really bad coverage
yeah.
of the war. I mean, like, just it's not an ideological thing, although, you know, Rob is a pro-Israel guy, but he has demonstrated that stories don't add up, that sources are bad sources,
yeah.
that sources have conflicts of interest, and so on and so forth. And so I don't read the Post for any coverage on the war. I rely on others. I never really, you know, if you know something about something, you read, you know, the first draft of history and you're like, well, that's wrong and that's wrong and that's wrong. But I was willing to overlook it. But the kind of rank anti-Semitism, and there's no other way to describe it, of this article, just bothered me to no end. And there's been no statement. There's been no retraction. There's been no mea culpa. There's been nothing.
It's open season on Jews.
Yeah.
So I'm going to shift for a second because there's something that I saw last night that I wanted to talk about, but it's really troubling to me. So I have a very close friend who I'm not naming names.
Don't.
He's not Jewish. But he is a very thoughtful person and understands nuance. And I saw a picture that he posted last night of his son who's graduating from college this weekend. And I know the kid since he's little. Mm-hmm. And what do you call the mortarboard, is that that?
Yeah, the mortarboard.
The mortarboard. On his motorboard, he wrote, Free Palestine, divest now, for his picture, for like his graduation. And I'm like, I know that my buddy is not happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
I know he can't be happy about that.
Right.
What am I supposed to think when I look at that picture and see this kid who went to New York City public schools, goes to a fine university, is taught to question things and be thoughtful. And he's putting this up. And by the way, he started he started down this path very early on after October 7th. Mm-hmm. And his father said to him, he's like, call Brad and talk to him. Mm-hmm. He's like, he'll explain things in a little bit more of a nuanced way. Like, again, these are not like radical people. Mm-hmm. And then I see this.
So did the kid call you?
Never. Because I don't think he's interested in hearing to say.
So I have a couple of reactions to this.
Yeah.
One, I think there's a lot of social pressure on kids to adopt certain things at the beginning. It's undoubtedly the case that is, and it's a way in which BDS is succeeding. So, for example, Pomona College ended its study abroad program with the Technion.
Yeah.
But not because of BDS. They said it wasn't because of BDS. We just didn't have so many kids who were interested in it. Right. And BDS said, well, of course, because we've made it socially unacceptable to do your junior abroad.
Chicken and an egg, right?
So there's that. Second, he's on a college campus. You said it's a fine school. Talk about monochromatic. I mean, if you are interested in this part of the world and you go and you take a class on it, you're not going to get nuance. You're not going to get viewpoint diversity. The guy who teaches this class at Vassar says at the top of his syllabus, this is not an objective look at the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians. This course is taught specifically from the Palestinian perspective. This is a Jewish studies professor.
How is this allowed by the university?
He's tenured.
But the university still has some sort of control, so basically, if you're a tenured professor, you can teach anything you want.
You can. The only way you can get fired is by shooting someone, raping them. I mean, I guess if you were rank racist, you'd be brought before some sort of disciplinary committee of the university.
But
if you're an anti-Semite, not so much.
But how does this serve students? How does this?
It doesn't. I mean, if you talk to a lot of academics, particularly ones who are younger, they see their roles as not just teaching people, but as activists. Their activism is as important as their scholarship. And in fact, if you look at some of the leading people in the sort of BDS movement, many of them Jewish, I'm thinking particularly of a professor at Northwestern, her scholarship has sort of ceased to exist, and she's only engaged in activism. Same thing with a woman at GW University, who is also Jewish, who is a leading figure in the BDS movement. No, scholarship is really questionable. So this is the environment.
So is Barry Weiss right?
Well, wait a second.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is the left, the reason why this kid didn't call you is the left doesn't think it has anything to learn.
Yeah, well.
Doesn't ever think it has anything
to learn. Also, young people don't think they have anything to learn.
But I'll tell you from my own experience that when I on the rare – first of all, when members of Congress ask for briefings from people like me, it's always people who are sort of in that range of right of center to left of center, but never the right and never the left. And on those occasions when I have come across those on the left, they're more interested in lecturing me and my colleagues and me, than they are in understanding nuance. I had this experience very recently where I came up for a briefing from a progressive member of Congress. I won't say which house or the name. And this individual acted as if they had nothing to learn and were profoundly arrogant in throughout the hour and a half that we had with him. And I wasn't the only one who felt that way. Is Barry Weiss right about the way Israel and the conflict in Israel is taught and that it's basically a subject for activism? She's 100% right. 100% right. When I briefed the University of Texas's Chancellor's advisory group in October, they said, what keeps you up at night? And I said, besides what's going to happen in Gaza and the region, that a student's going to show up on one of your campuses in the University of Texas system and is going to be unable to learn about this conflict because it is the subject of activism, not scholarship any longer. So yeah, Barry Weiss, swallow hard, man. Barry Weiss is 100% right. And her wife writes the funniest fucking column ever for the Free Press on Fridays. I never miss it.
Who's her wife?
Nellie Bowles. She's also a New York Times alum.
Uh-huh.
has a new book out about cancel culture. I don't know about the book, but her columns, where she kind of just runs through the absurdity of the week in the news, and she's very funny and just has a really witty way about her. I never miss it. We have one of our former podcast producers is Barry Weiss's podcast producer, and I texted her and I was like, yo, tell Nellie Bowles that she's the best. Yeah. I look forward to Fridays, not just because they're Fridays, but because I know I'm going to get a Nellie Bowles column in my inbox.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit depressing to think that, you know, all of these voices about the campus culture wars from the right, maybe they weren't so wrong.
Well, I mean, I think that's really the place that I'm at, is that, you know, I don't know, you have to recognize you may not, you know, be a conservative or a leftist, but there are some things that people on either side say that, you know, that's right. And I think there've been a few things recently that, you know, the right has said that makes a lot more sense than what the left is saying about issues. And it's not just Israel. Like, I think when you look back on COVID, you're going, you know, the more distance, the kind of crazy school closures that we had here in Maryland were
detrimental. And other places, yeah. Well, look, I think even at the time we knew that this was going to be detrimental to children's learning.
But then it became political.
Well, like everything else, we're living in an extremely politicized time.
If you said, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this, this is detrimental to the kids, you're a right-wing conspiracy Trumpist, whatever. There's more and more evidence that it's not conclusive, but that it could have been a lab leak. It could have been. I mean, the intelligence agencies have said that they don't know, but there is evidence that one could reasonably conclude. I think they didn't use medium confidence. They used high, low, medium. I don't know what they did. I think they said they have some reason to suspect that that's possible.
Yeah, but that doesn't impact the school closure.
No. I'm just saying those are things that the right said, hey, we should take a closer look at, and people were immediately called conspiracy theorists.
Well, I mean, I think that line was kind of blurred by, like, it was a lab leak that was done on purpose, right? Like, there's a difference. Like, if there's a lab leak and it was like, holy shit.
I think if we look back on it, it wasn't just that. I'm just saying the kind of one of the knock-on effects of October 7th for me has to been re-examining my worldview remains sort of consistent, but expanding my mind in what I'm taking in and saying, hey, maybe they've got a point there. Like, I don't believe everything that my friend and Maddie's former babysitter, who's the editor of the Washington Free Beacon, believes, but her paper is the one that blew the lid on foreign influence in Turkish money in Washington, D.C. and other foreign influence operations and stuff like that. Like, that was good reporting. You didn't read that in the Post or the Times. The Claudine Gay thing was all started on the right. And
yeah, but that was kind of a witch hunt going after her.
I don't know. Fine.
Let's find shit on her.
No doubt. But I don't think anybody after that, looking at Claudine Gay's credentials, believes that she should have been the president of Harvard. Okay. It was a witch hunt. Undoubtedly the case. Claudine Gay's academic achievements were thin. She was a plagiarizer, and she was basically an enforcer of DEI principles at the university. That was it. By the way, she is a signatory of that letter opposing the boycott of Israeli academics.
Oh, opposing.
Okay. It's very, very interesting. I was flipping through. I didn't get a chance. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people have signed it. I only got to like the G's, and I was it just caught my eye. I wasn't even looking for her name, and I was like, oh, wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. We're coming to the end of the episode, but I wanted to also say,
I'm going to send you the next Friday's Nellie Bowles piece.
Also send me that article that was in the Post this weekend. But we're coming also to the end of the season.
Yeah, man.
So we talked about it before, and it's like, oh, is this our last episode of the season? It's like, we have to sort of give a little bit of a warning before. So we have to have, like, we can't right. just say like, oh, by the way, today was the last episode.
Right.
So everybody just get ready that the next episode, no matter when it drops, because we have to figure out the timing of this, given what's happening with holidays and graduations and,
ooh, graduations. And
whatnot. Yeah. We both have daughters graduating from high school this year, which is
big
crazy.
Mazel.
Unbelievable.
I don't know if I'm going to cry at graduation. I'm definitely going to cry when we drop Maddie off at college.
Well, you're going to cry when
you've been
through
it twice already.
Dude, this is it. This is my last one. Like,
I know.
I'm going to cry. I'm already crying.
I can't get my mind around it. No. Like, there's too much to do.
Yeah.
And then we're going to drop her off and I'll be like, holy shit. I think the only thing that's going to help me out is a trip to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
There you go. Plus a lot of drinking. Anyway, so right. The next episode will be the last episode of the season, even though we're not going to reach the magic number 33. We'll get to 28, which given all, right. all of the missed weeks that we have, is not terrible.
Not terrible. Right?
Not bad. Okay, all so right. we're out. We'll be back one more time, and then we're off for the summer.
All right. Later.
Later.